Okay, it's 1:05. I'm going to call us to order again. Good afternoon. I hope you got plenty to eat and not too much.
Pardon me?
It's all right. A fellow limper, I've been limping. Welcome back, everyone. I don't know who to thank for lunch. That is something that was not covered at chair training, but whoever it was, thank you very much for lunch. That was really, really good. Yes, that was delicious. Jean, did you cook? Did you make that yourself?
Yes.
Fantastic. Outstanding job. All right, the first item on the afternoon agenda is the correction and approval of the minutes from April 8th, not 2015, but 2016. Okay, let me see what I can do here. How is that? Okay, so if I stand hunched over, you can hear me. first item is the correction or approval of the minutes from April 8th. That should be 2016, not 2015. The minutes have been distributed. Are there any corrections for the minutes? Actually, I need to put my glasses on so I can see. Okay, hearing none, can I get a motion that we approve the minutes? Moved? Needs to be seconded? Moved and seconded. Those in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. And the minutes are approved. All right, we'll pass on to reports from standing committees from Rights and Responsibilities. Jason Holt.
Okay, good.
Where is that?
It's under the keyboard.
Okay, so our Rights and Responsibilities Committee today discussed two items. One concerning mid-year hire timeline. Currently, there is no formal procedure in our faculty manual concerning mid-year hire timeline. So we seek to adopt such a timeline. That is the first item we considered. The second item we considered today was the role of advising in our faculty manual, and I'll talk a little bit about each here in a moment. So basically... So basically what I'm pulling up here for you is the proposed mid-year hire timeline. So this would affect all faculty that were hired, I guess, in the January term. The dates, we've combed through all dates in the faculty manual for regular hire timelines, and we've scaled them so that every date there is reflected here in this document. We've submitted it to all levels, all campuses, and we've had no concerns with these dates. So what we will do later today is we're going to propose a motion that we adopt this timeline. There's still work to do because then we, if we adopt this motion, then we need to insert language in the manual to do this. Right now, as it stands, we have a date for every deadline there, but that date is implied for someone who was hired in the fall of the year. So we just need to go in there and insert appropriately these dates that you see here. We'll also be working to put this in the appendix so that people that are mid-year hires, they'll have a place, a spot where they can go and find everything in one spot. And we're also going to, if once this motion passes, if it passes, we're going to put it on the Palmetto College website, as we already have one for regular hires, or better to say, August hires. So that's a second location where people can quickly find out all the dates that concern them concerning tenure and promotion. So that's that.
For the record, that was motion one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that'll be the first motion. The second thing that we intend to do is to add, right now under levels of service in the service section of tenure and promotion procedure, there's no mention of the word advising. Having served personally on tenure and promotion, our local tenure and promotion committee for 4 years now, I can't think of one time where it was classified otherwise. Meaning, when people do advising, they list it as service. So that will be our second motion, that we include advising in here in red. By the way, this is not there right now. In red is what will be added. That we add advising. That's our second motion of the day. And the third motion of the day is that we strike the reference to advising in teaching responsibilities completely. Currently on page 48 of the 2016 version of the manual, under item 6, advising is listed as a teaching responsibility. And we propose to strike that altogether so that it better serves everyone, the individual. So this way, without reference to it as a teaching responsibility, the candidate can make their argument one way or the other, teaching or service, however it best benefits them. And that is our report. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes.
I was just curious if once we vote in the change for hires that are made in January versus August, once we vote that in, is that effective for people that were mid-hires?
The faculty manual says that you follow the procedure under the manual that you were hired under. So it would not affect you if you were hired before we adopt this. You have the option.
Thank you.
Did I answer your question? Okay.
Let me remind all of you to state your name and affiliation for the record.
Andy Yanks Lancaster. Is it also optional for every mid-year hire? Or will it become mandatory for a new mid-year hire?
It will become mandatory for a new mid-year hire. Any other questions? Yes.
Sam Downs, Apache. What's the purpose of specifying that? What's the purpose of removing this language and specifying that advising has to be a service, or is a service thing?
Well, first of all, we're not saying that it has to be a service.
Right.
We're saying that it can be a service. The purpose of removing this language here is because, I know on some of the campuses that. Advising is not a teaching responsibility, and we just feel it's better to remove it so that the individual can make the case for themselves whether it's service or teaching. So that was the rationale for removing it. Other questions?
Thank you, Jason, for that report. Those are all changes that, motions that will result in changes in the manual, so they are all substantive. And Jason, Jason will post those motions on the website within 10 days for your review. Okay, at this time, let's hear from the Welfare Committee, Hélène Mère-Aphélie.
Hey, so the Welfare Committee has set up a date for the TNP workshop that will be on January 13. It's a Friday, 9:30 to 2:30 at Capstone Conference Center. It's the same place we've had that TNP workshop last year and the year before. Something to put on your calendar and let people know about. Friday, January 13. 9:30 to 2:30, Capstone Conference Center. And I'm pretty sure Jean will be sending out flyers and everything. The next charge that is with Welfare Committee is the award. So you know that we've had the Duffy Excellence in Teaching Award, and last year we started the Plyler Excellence in Service Award. And this year will be launched the Dennis Shaw Excellence in Scholarship Award. So we've discussed that a lot about the how many files we're going to have to read and how many meetings and all that. And we had a subcommittee with that is chaired by Chris Reinhardt with the Research and Scholarship Committee. And we thought, okay, they're going to start reading those files. They come up with their three best and give that to Welfare, and Welfare is going to read the three best and pick up the winner. And then we realized that we're going to have a lot of people involved in spending a lot of time reading everybody's application. And since we have a new charge as well, I'm coming back to that later, we would need to have other subcommittees for the two other awards. And we're like, stop. Let's make it simpler. So we've decided to house all those three awards. We'll keep them in Welfare, but we're going to go with one nomination per campus per award. This way we've got 15 applications. It's still manageable for all of us, and we don't take anybody else's time and subcommittees that are going to need to meet and read them this and pass the files and all that. So one nomination per award per campus. Let me see the dates. The deadline for nomination will be December 1st, so you still have time to figure out, I don't know, your next FO meeting and find your nominees for that. December 1st. Files will be due by January 31st, since Welfare will have about 10 days to read all the files, and when we meet February 10th, we need to come up with the winners. So January 31st will be the due date for the files that you'll send to me, and I'll give my email address. It'll be in the minutes or something. So that's for the awards. We also have in charge of the faculty survey. We did work before school started and since school started on adding up definitions. I don't know if you remember that survey. We had people getting confused between the sex and gender and genetics and all that. So we added some definitions so it'd be clear when people are checking, they know what they're checking. And we're thinking about adding questions, just one question about reporting bullying or not. So that'd be it. Executive committee came up with a new charge for welfare, and that'd be investigating salary inequity in across Palmetto College campuses and peer institutions that we added. So that's something that welfare will be working on as well, since you probably know it came across the last three surveys. Yeah. The two main issues were the salary inequity and the bullying on the workplace. So we can't just do them all at once, so we're starting with the salary inequity, trying to improve that first. And that's it. Those are the charges for us. Any questions?
No? Yes. So if a campus has more than one person who wants to apply for an award, then the campus has to do like their own way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Likai from South Kachi. The one nomination per one campus, the rule also applies for the new Dennis Shaw Award.
The new Dennis Shaw
Award. We went with all.
On the rules we Christine sent out earlier last week for the Shaw Award is the research scholarship committee will review the initial application first and select five nominees.
And that was the old the old way of doing.
Okay.
But welfare decided to house everything from A to Z under the same committee. So this will come out. We voted on that this morning, so this will come out.
That's effective this year?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, just check.
And we put everything on the same deadline, all the nominations and files due and everything, so it's easier for everybody to keep track of everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Alain, for that report. Now we'll hear from System Affairs, Kajal Ghoshroy.
Thanks, Tom. The System Affairs met to discuss six items on our agenda today, and the first item was a summary of the minus grading survey that we did over the spring. And if you are interested in the raw data, you can have it and look at it. But it does not make any sense. It did not make any sense to me. So I requested Sam to boil it down in words or graphs that I can understand and the committee can understand. So I'm very grateful to Jean for deploying the survey and to Sam for analyzing it. Please have a big thank you to both of them. They worked over the summer, which they didn't have to, but they put it together for the committee. So the highlights of the result is in the first graph, and as you can tell, out of the 168 possible people that could have responded, 70 did, so that's a 41.7% response. And a little over 40% wanted to keep the grading as is, and a little under 60% wanted change, and there were two different options of change. A little more people opted for option one, and option one is a This was the option where B was equivalent to a 2.7 grade point, and option two where B was equivalent to a 3.0 grade point. And Sam also did this very complicated table for us. On the left is people, or are people that wanted change, and on the right are people who wanted to keep it unchanged. And this is their reasoning for why they wanted to keep it the same or change it to option one or two. So the highest number of hits, or people said, people that liked change wanted change because of greater precision was the number one, and it consisted, or it was consistent with other major universities, was number two reasoning. For people who wanted to keep the current system, the highest response was for the reasoning that it would confuse students and require adjustment by departments. And the second reasoning was that it might have negative effect on scholarship, retention, and graduation rate. Again, if you wanted to look at the raw data, the committee could have it available for you, but that's the summary. And the committee is requesting the chair to report this summary data to the Columbia Senate, who were the first, in the first place, the people who requested a survey response from the Palmetto College campuses. Okay. The second item was the tail end of the proposal from last fall that wanted a unification of the designation to what did we finally say?
PCAM.
But during that process, we learned that there were a bunch of courses that were listed but were not offered, and part of the proposal was to remove the obsolete courses. Of the ones that were on record that have not been known to be used lately are the following RCAM courses and a couple of UCAM courses. So in spring, we had sent out a word to campuses to tell us, give us some response, if they wanted any of these still continued on the bulletin. And we only heard from one faculty from Sumter, who said that in 2011, Palmetto College had approved RCAM 106 to be put on the books, but nobody knew that RCAM 106 was actually put on the books after approval. And so we heard back that RCAM 106 was being taught as 105 on Sumter campus. So if there are scenarios like that anywhere on our campuses, we would like to hear back so we do not remove these courses by mistake in case somebody wants to keep continuing them or are already teaching them. So this would be my second request going out. Please, please talk to your campuses at your faculty meetings and get back if they want to keep any of this. And I hear from Chris Nesmith that he will talk to the registrar about the change in the designation only after this is sorted out. Is that right, Chris?
I thought that would make more sense. And in either case, the change won't be effective in the bulletin until fall of 2017.
Right. Okay. All right, so that was item number two. Then there's that error here. The third item is modifying degree requirements for number of hours at the 400 level for the liberal studies degree program. So this is something that came to us from Chris Nesmith through the Faculty Advisory Committee. And this is the rationale for changing the degree requirement. And currently, it states, the bulletin states, that all courses must be at the upper level with at least 15 hours at the 400 level or above, and all grades must be a C or better, et cetera, et cetera. And the feedback they got, the committee got, is that there are some difficulties with that because many disciplines have limited courses at the 400 level, and it requires many exceptions and waivers. And so the committee discussed this, and our finding is was a few faculty who objected to this change. For example, they stated that psychology has 400 level courses that are rigorous, and students are required to fulfill two areas of their curriculum, and that 400 level courses are core courses in their cognate. So the committee requests the Palmetto College Faculty Advisory Committee to please assess and differentiate each cognate and check the requirements so we don't leave anybody out or anybody in difficulty. And once we hear back, we will revisit this proposal one more time. The fourth item is a motion, so that'll come under new business. And do you want me to say?
Just a little bit.
Okay. This was, again, a proposal that came through Chris Nesmith from the Faculty Advisory Committee, and this requires a change in the BLS curriculum tracks. Currently, they have the following verbiage. In their major area, they need 27 hours, and they can select only one of the following three options, three different disciplines. And the motion is going to change the word one to two, because this is an interdisciplinary degree, to make it more broader. Just one word change, yeah. And let's see. The two other items that we had, we are still working on it. So Andy Yinks brought to System Affairs the class climate survey questions that an ad hoc committee was reviewing last year. And so System Affairs is now reviewing that. And we will probably continue working on it for the fall semester. And the last item we discussed was creation of a Palmetto core. So just like the Carolina core, the AA and AS degrees would be prepared or set up with the Carolina core of our own courses. But the committee's working on this, and we'll work through fall on that one. Any questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Kajal, for that report. Now we're going to the Executive Committee, and I'll give that report. Executive Committee met on September 9th. We discussed the upcoming charges for standing committees, some of which we've heard about. We talked about a faculty manual revision that has to do with reducing the number of senators committed by each campus proportionately, and that will come forward as a motion under new business. And then within the executive committee, we talked about sharing and redistributing tasks because it has been a perception, it has been a fact in some years that the secretary ends up doing too much, and perhaps the at-large ends up doing not enough, and we're trying to make that more of a streamlined process. We talked about some ideas like splitting up the way that minuting is done, and also doing some mandatory and fairly formal Roberts Rules training for the person who's in the vice chair role. That was what we talked about at that meeting. Any questions? Okay, I'm going to pass it on to our manual liaison officer, Andy Yingst.
Hello. In the spring, we sent up 5 proposed changes to the faculty manual. Those worked their way up to the Board of Trustees, and all 5 were accepted, so that's good news. Tom just mentioned there's a change to the manual coming up today, and probably next time I'm going to be presenting a couple changes to the manual, mostly updating some HR stuff at the back of the manual. I'll have that for presentation next time. I'm going to be working on that with Chris Nesmith between now and then. Any questions?
The global index. Would you state that?
Hi, Kajal Goshroy from Sumter. One of those 5 changes was deleting the global index column from the TNP file section. We've got an updated version of the template for filling out your TNP forms. We're going to wait until after November to post that so that nobody thinks they need to change everything. But I'm going to email people who are going up for tenure promotion to full in the next couple days and let them know, hey, if you don't want to include that, that's been changed, you do not need to. But this change is optional. If you like having that number there or if you don't want to change your file anymore, that is also fine. So this affects people going up for TNP right now if they care for it too. Jason
Holt, Lancaster. This is just, Andy, could you also copy the TMP, the local TMP chairs in the back?
Sure.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Now we come to the reports from special committees. We have committee on, do we have a report from the committees on libraries?
Not this.
Thank you. No report. Committee on libraries. Committee on curricula and courses is still a to be announced, and I will talk about that a little bit under unfinished business. Do we have a report from Shelley Jones on committee on faculty welfare?
So this is for the meeting dates, April 18th, May 16th, and August 22nd. So after meeting with financial aid representatives in its April meeting, the Columbia Faculty Welfare Committee continues to work toward fully funding the Faculty and Staff Dependent Scholarship Fund. Currently, it's only awarding scholarships to about 50% of applicants due to limited funding. In the May meeting, the Faculty Welfare Committee met with USC Police Chief Chris L. Wykenick to discuss campus safety issues. This includes active shooter training, which can be requested by any department or campus, in addition to the 2 to 3 scheduled trainings per year, and the online incident report for behavioral intervention team referral. And I have a link in the formal report, and all faculty and staff can use that. At the request of the Columbia Faculty Advisory Committee, the Columbia Faculty Welfare Committee is looking into the creation of a university policy on summer salary compensation, given that each college and department handles compensation differently. And then spurred by a policy change regarding professional leave for faculty, which was proposed during summer break, with comments closing 10 days prior to the faculty reporting date. The committee is also in contact with Provost Joan Gable about ensuring sufficient time for faculty to review and comment on policy changes. And the last item, the committee is exploring faculty concerns about new fees paid to providers of the optional retirement plan accounts. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. The annual report is also available from last year, and I have a link to that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. We'll pass on to the Board of Trustees Liaison Committee. Henny Van Bulk.
Thank you. Good afternoon. The Academic Affairs and Faculty Liaison Committee of the Board of Trustees met on Friday, September the 16th. The committee recommended for approval to the full Board of Trustees the following. A name change on the Columbia campus from the Office of Summer, Evening, and Non-Degree Programs to Office of On Your Time Initiatives, Provost Office. From African American Professors Program to Grace Jordan McFadden Professors Program, Office of the Provost. From the Department of Physical Education and Athletic Training to Department of Physical Education, the College of Education. I also recommended to the Board of Trustees the program College Move at USC Columbia Integrated Information Technology move from the College of Hospitality, Retail, and Sports Management to the College of Engineering and Computing. There were a few program terminations recommended in Columbia, Bachelor's of Arts, European Studies, the College of Arts and Sciences, and the Bachelor's of Arts, Latin American Studies, College of Arts and Sciences. A few new programs were recommended on comprehensive campuses, including the Arts, the Bachelor's of Arts in Health Information, Health Informatics. That's a word I've never seen before. Informatics, USC Upstate. The Bachelor of Science in Secondary Teaching Education, Biology, USC Beaufort. And then they did an annual review of programs that were initiated over the last couple of years to follow up on their status. Thank you.
Questions?
Any questions? Motions? Adjournments?
Thank you. I know I mentioned it in the first part of the day. I wanted to say again, remind you, if you're giving a report today, to please send that report electronically to Brian Love. That is going to help him complete the minutes accurately and on time. We have a report from the Research and Productive Scholarship Committee. Our at-large member from Union, Chris Sixta Reinhart, cannot be here with us today, and so I understand, Lee Tsai, you're going to give that report.
On behalf of the Research and Productive Scholarship and the Chair, Christine Reinhart, I'm reporting meaning two things. First is regarding the Research and Productive Scholarship website, and it has been on for a while, and it's right here, if you can find it. Actually, we just added a link to the Palmetto College website. It's under Palmetto College, and faculty and staff, here is the website. So, we only have a few profiles here, so we strongly encourage you and all faculty of Palmetto College's campuses to think about creating their own website. It's not just about scholarship. It is actually your own website about scholarship, service, and or teaching. And so if you're interested in creating your own website, please contact Bob Dyer. The setup is very easy and only costs 1 hour or a couple of hours, depending how much information you want to include it in that website. And Bob Dyer's email address is Dyer R, mailbox, South Carolina, sc.edu. Also, the Research and Productive Scholarship Committee has decided to showcase two faculty research profiles per semester. So that profile will be shown here under Featured Research. So the first one is Mr. Randy Ivey from Union, instructor. So, but the committee has decided to showcase two profiles regarding that. And Christine will send out further emails regarding the nominations or self-nominations to be included on the featured website. And number three is Research Scholarship Committee will keep updating and maintaining this website. So we do need your help to put more faculty expertise and profiles onto it. So far we only have several of them and several disciplines, so we want to see more in the future. And the second main thing is, I have mentioned before, is about the nomination reminder and guidelines for the Palmetto College Dennis Shaw Award. This is a new award the first year. And Christine has already sent out the reminder last Friday, I think. So if you haven't got one, check your email. And also, Christine has confirmed the monetary bonus amount with Dr. Elkins. It's the same as the other two awards, $2,500. So that's included as well. So that's all the reports. Any questions?
Thank you, Lee. From the PCC Academic Advisory Council, Chris Nesmith.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon again, everybody. Last year, the Senate codified the Palmetto College campus's Faculty Advisory Committee, which been around since the beginning of the Liberal Studies and Organizational Leadership degrees, but existed outside of the committee, primarily as an appointed committee. And so for those of you who are new, I just thought I would refer real quickly to what was passed last year to remind everybody. The Faculty Advisory Committee considers academic policy and curriculum issues concerning the baccalaureate degree programs of the Palmetto College campuses. I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, pertaining to academic policy, such as student grievances, readmission petitions, and other policy items. Committee will also consider matters pertaining to the curricula for these baccalaureate degree programs and will make recommendation for curriculum changes to the Faculty Senate via the System Affairs Committee. And so that's happened with the two items that were sent forward to System Affairs that Professor Gosh Roy referred to in her report. And that's all that we have formally that has come forward from the committee right now. I did think I would, though, let you know who the committee members are for this year and also give you a little bit of what we hope to be working on this coming year. One of the changes to the committee through the Senate last year was how the committee is comprised, and that is one member is elected from each campus and three members are appointed by the chancellor or her designee. And this year we have from Lancaster, Suzanne Penuel was elected. And these folks were all elected in the April meetings of their faculty organization. So Suzanne from Lancaster, Carmela Gottsman from Salkehatchee, Eric Reisenauer from Sumter, and Avery Fouts from Union, and Shelley Jones from Extended University. Three members were appointed, Ron Cox from Lancaster, Lisa Hammond from Lancaster, and Ray McManus from Sumter. And then the chair is a member of the academic deans, and that rotates from one campus to the other, all serve two-year terms. Since I was previously the chair of the committee, I volunteered, I guess, to serve as the first chair ex officio of this committee, and I will serve in that capacity this year and next year. And after that, one of my esteemed colleagues from the other campuses will have the honor of serving as chair of this committee, so congratulations. Okay, so a couple things that we're looking for toward doing this year. One of them is to recommend to the Senate that we change the name of this committee. And there's several reasons for that. One is it's quite a mouthful, but more importantly, it's often confused because it's so similar to the Provost Faculty Advisory Committee. And some people think it is that committee, and it gets confused. And we don't have a formal suggestion, but just be aware that's coming. I'm going to suggest, we'll see what the committee thinks, but we'll come up with something more along the lines of an Academic Advisory Committee or something along those lines. We're also looking to propose several new courses, primarily a special topics course and an independent studies course that would be available for all faculty to offer on their campuses that would be Palm courses, PALM, so that would give us greater flexibility and authority over those courses rather than the disciplines. Although the discipline courses, special topics, independent studies would certainly still be available to anyone who wants to do that. And finally, also we're looking to recommend that the current senior capstone course, which is University 401, that we create a new course that would be, right now the working title or number is Palm 401, which would be the same course, a senior capstone course, but again would be under our purview and also would help prevent confusion with the University 401 course, because there are several different versions of that course taught on the campuses, as you guys are aware. So we can look forward to those things coming forward, too. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Okay. Thank you, Chris. And the last of the special committees to report is the Conflict of Interest Committee. Now, Noni did submit a report, and I was supposed to read it, and I frankly have lost it. So, you have it? Yeah, please.
I have to read this off of my phone. The Conflict of Interest Committee has had one possible conflict of interest presented to us in August. Committee members reviewed the file. There were a couple of questions. These were answered with no further objections to approval of the way the COI was being handled. And that is the report.
Thank you.
And I can't answer questions.
It's all right. I can't even keep up with the report, so don't worry about it. Okay, and that concludes the reports. We're going to pass on to unfinished business. And I'm going to call on a couple of folks to help me. I know definitely Chris Bundrick here. The first item on unfinished business is the member for Committee on Curricula and Courses. Now, this is a committee is a Columbia Faculty Senate committee that we have representation on. And you may recall this is the committee that Robert Castleberry served on for many years. We, to make a long story short, we've been looking for someone who is a good fit for this committee, who can do it, who can make the meetings. And we've been through several folks, and still we are coming up with no one. And I've had a couple of people who have tried really hard to make this work with their schedules, and they just haven't been able to. And the reason why I'm going to call here on Chris Bundrick is he was our latest try, and Chris actually had some words last week, as recently as last week, I believe, with that committee chair. What we're looking for here, well, I'm gonna ask you, can you help us figure out who would be a good fit for this in terms of their schedule, of the calendar? Is there such a thing?
If I knew that question, if I knew the answer to that question, they'd pay me a lot.
Fair enough.
I'm prepared to say what someone would need to be able to do.
There you go. Please.
To make that fit, as far as I understand it. I did have a fairly lengthy conversation with KC, the chair of Courses and Curricula. This is her second year in. Let me start off by beginning. One of the problems we're running into is that Robert left a tremendously large pair of shoes to fill.
Correct.
He did this job so well for so long that I think, you know, some of us are just kind of stumbling to try to figure out how to even begin to take his role there. The Courses and Curricula Committee of the Columbia Senate essentially reviews and approves or does not approve changes, as the name suggests, to courses, to curricula. This includes things like changes of names of courses, changes of requirements to do various degrees. It also includes looking at specific learning objectives and things like that to approve new courses or to delete old courses, things like that. Any change that really affects the bulletin or degree requirements has to go through Courses and Curricula. A lot of this work, it's my understanding, goes through a sort of online interface. The various members will sort of farm out different proposals, either to add, change, or delete, and offer commentary. The committee then meets as a whole roughly every third Monday of the long semesters at noon at the Cooper Library. And this is where the trouble starts.
Correct.
Casey made it clear to me that she would be perfectly happy to have a representative from the regional campuses be on the committee and not feel especially required to attend the meetings for the face-to-face meetings. I recognize that as a kind of flexibility, but I also sort of feel uncomfortable calling that representation.
Correct.
The workload seems reasonably manageable in terms of how many of these applications people would have to read. You'd read them as they came in throughout the semester and then discuss them as necessary in these meetings. The workload seems manageable, but having to cancel something like a quarter of your Monday classes to make these meetings seems a bit burdensome. I couldn't see any way around that end of it. Perhaps somebody who lived closer to Columbia, you know, who likes going to the Cooper around noon on Mondays, would be a better fit for that kind of position. But I think for people who have to drive, you know, as you're well aware, it's a long trip up here, and you're talking about burning an entire Monday. I don't know if there's some possibility of arranging more flexible meetings, you know, calling in, video conferencing, things like that. The sense I got, my very subjective sense, was that there was not a lot of immediate enthusiasm about doing anything along those lines. There was a general desire for face-to-face interaction. You know, and as we talked about, I think, you know, maybe one of the things that we need to talk about with the Columbia Senate is how to, you know, make this relationship a little more possible.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, well, first I want to agree with you wholeheartedly about Robert. That is part of what we're doing, is we've had somebody who's doing it so long and doing it so well that we've just gotten accustomed to it, and I don't think we were quite prepared for what all he was doing. Obviously, just to repeat some of what Chris has said here, you're talking about a Monday middle of the day commitment monthly, which led Henny and I and some of us on the executive committee to look to see if this person has to be a senator, and there's nothing in the manual that says they have to be a senator. So obviously I'm talking to senators, but saying this might be a better fit for someone who isn't a senator, who wanted once monthly service and a relatively short meeting, although again possibly a long drive and on a Monday. So I'm gonna ask Cottrell, do you have anything to add to what Chris has reported? I know that you also had considered this.
Considered it because I live in Columbia, but on Mondays in the afternoon I'm over there in Sumter.
Okay. So, I think we're all going to run into that problem. Yeah. Is that correct? Okay. All right.
I would have done it otherwise.
Well, sure, and I believe Chris would as well. I mean, we have people willing to do it. We just can't quite make them work. So what I will do then, I was going to go ahead and open the floor to nominations, but I don't think I will do that because right now I don't think I'm talking to people who can actually make that commitment. So I will contact the chair of that committee and we'll see what we can change, see what we can kind of compromises we can come up with. I, for one, agree with Chris that if the solution is, well, you don't have to be there, then there's no point are considering ourselves to have representation on a pretty important committee. We've seen how much talk along these lines we've seen coming from System Affairs just today. I think we need to be represented on that committee. So I will reach out to that chair. Thank you, both of you. Okay, also, this did not make it to the agenda, but another item under unfinished business is we need to confirm the slate for the grievance committee. Probably what I'm going to do is discover Noni's letter while I'm doing this. Okay, is that correct? So this is the current slate for the Palmetto College campus's grievance committee. And I don't think there's going to be any fervent hot competition for this job. So I'm hoping we can just go confirm this by acclamation. Can I get a motion to confirm this slate?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion is passed. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to new business, and I'm going to start with the motion coming from Executive Committee. This is for a manual revision. I'm going to ask for Andy Yingst's help as we go along here. And the idea, I have come to fondly think of this as Senator Disarmament. I just like that sound. The idea here is that according to the current bylaws, we have a minimum, we commit a minimum number of 3 senators per campus and a maximum number of 9. And we are required to elect and furnish the verb I like to use is field. We field a senator, like fielding an agent almost, at every 100 students, full-time equivalent students. So what we were trying to do was figure out how we can keep the same proportionate representation without quite so many people per campus being invested in the job. What we find out, and what I'm finding out on my own campus, but I also hear it from people at a lot of campuses, is that you've got X number of faculty, a certain amount of those faculty aren't ever going to work on Senate. And our job is not to say, shame on you. Our job is to figure out who is it that we actually continually draw on for Senate duty, and how can we make this a little bit less of a hardship on those people. So the proposed revision would be to the minimum and maximum numbers, reducing everything by a third. So the maximum number currently 9, reduced to 6 maximum. The minimum number currently 3, reduced to 2, but with a provision that if that campus wants to provide a third for equal representation on all 3 standing committees, that can be done. Instead of 100 students, 150 students is the number by which the new senator is fielded. My good friend Henny says, if you're going to do this with all that language and all those numbers, you need to turn this into something very visual. So I have done my best here. And I have created a little PowerPoint that I hope is correct. By the way, I noticed that Kajal, you sent things to Sam and he gave you wonderful charts and graphs, and I sent this to him. He basically just said, that's okay. So I guess we see who rates. We're talking here about if we had a hypothetical campus with 650 students, then that campus would minimally provide 3 senators. You add 1 for each 100 students, that campus is providing 6 senators. That's the current system of representation according to the bylaws. Of course, my graph has nice little people on it. Now, suppose this same campus has 12 eligible faculty members. You have 3 who are consistently uninterested in serving on Senate. Right away, the current bylaws grabs 50% of that faculty. You're drawing that from only 75% of the total faculty, 9 out of 12. And then over 3 years, as you have terms expire, you're going to end up involving, under the current system, 75% of that faculty to represent you. Now, when we compare that, and I know these are not exactly apples to oranges comparisons, but when we apples to apples comparisons, but when we compare that to the Columbia Senate, I think Columbia Senate is represented by about 10 to 15% of the total faculty. And effectively, over a few years, we're committing much higher percentages. Under the proposed system, which again, we arrived at the number 2 as a minimum just by reducing all the numbers by a third, this same campus would give us 2 minimum senators and add 1 for each 150 full-time equivalent. So this same campus would produce 4 senators. If we look at the same number of faculty, we're talking about an immediate commitment of 33% and over several years, 50%. And that, as I'll point out when we go back to the language on the revision, that is tying up people who, according to faculty welfare surveys for years, would like to see the service commitment lowered above all, above the 3 divisions. I can't say what it's like on individual campuses other than my own. I do know that we see a lot of the same folk doing this sort of in endless succession, and we're trying to get away from that and give some people some time doing something other than Senate, which I think is the main goal here. I'm going to go back to the revision. Okay, so... We do not aim to change the representational formula. We will lower, as I say, the minimum, average, and maximum number of active senators, effectively reducing the current Senate representation by 1/3. If you'll look at the bottom here, I've tried to sum up some of the benefits that we had in mind. Again, we would maintain a proportionate representation without burdening campuses, and sometimes this is an extra hardship on a small campus, and would allow faculty members regularly involved in Senate more off-duty time. The change responds to faculty wishes to lower overall service commitment and therefore increase time for teaching and scholarship. I've mentioned that. The proviso for smaller campuses to elect 3 members if they so choose will allow proportional representation on the Senate's 3 standing committees, but I will say, when we were talking about possibly altering the makeup of the executive committee, I know that a couple of the smaller campuses were ready to forego the idea of absolutely by the numbers equal representation, so I'm not really sure. We put that proviso in there for that reason. And also, and finally, it should make Senate membership and representation a more competitive process, so that we would have maybe more seasoned and invested senators across all the campuses. This is the main idea. Andy, is there anything I need to add to that? And I'll take questions in just a moment.
I'm glad to answer questions.
Okay, so this obviously would be a change to the manual and therefore substantive, but I wanted to go ahead and field any questions, comments, thoughts at this time? And please do state your name and affiliation for the record.
Bishop Sumter. It seems in limiting the numbers, we do more to damage the representation of diversity than we would if we limited the number of years of service for any one individual.
So you are saying perhaps the terms need to change?
So, Sumter has a restriction on how many years in a row you can go any time off.
Okay.
I think we abolished that rule in our faculty.
Well, we did have it, and I think that's perhaps a better way to retain
diversity. Okay. Did you have an answer for that?
The problem we're trying to address is campuses where that just doesn't work, where there just aren't enough people, mm-hmm. where people are. Without forcing someone who doesn't want to serve, someone who's willing, but people are feeling expected to serve over and over.
Thank you, Andy. In fact, I mean, these aren't I mean, I really just invented these numbers in terms of the number of students and the number of faculty, and I'm pretty close, or have been close in a couple of places. So, you know, my hypothetical is not that far off, or so I understand. Other questions? Okay, let me just mention this. Oh, yes.
Bishop again from Sumter. Did you entertain any idea of doing something more electronic for some of the meetings so that we didn't physically have to be here?
No, that was not brought up. Can you give me a little more so that I understand what you're asking?
Well, we're doing more and more education online, and we have the capacity. I'm not sure if every campus does, but I think every campus can do it live.
Okay.
That would solve some of the problems.
Okay. That is certainly something we can take under consideration. When we were coming up with this, we kind of fully expected, even though it's coming from executive committee, we wanted to throw the idea out there because we thought it was an idea that we were hearing that campuses were interested in entertaining. But we've also fully expected it perhaps to get referred to committee so that we can cook over some of these nuances and additional ideas in committee. Penny.
In previous years, the same discussion has been brought up, at least within the committee and Moldova, and electronic representation has been discussed at some point in time, as I recall it. And my recollection is that there was a sentiment that the Senate really needs to meet face to face. The Senate is not the same as a committee meeting or some other meeting, and there's some significance in meeting the people face to face in the Senate meeting.
Okay.
I recall that to be the sentiment of that discussion.
And that was discussions on the floor, Henny? Or in executive committee?
Okay.
Did you hear that, Steve? Okay. Again, these kind of things can certainly be discussed. This just starts us in a direction. That was our main idea here. So, if I don't have further questions about this, of course, yeah, back row.
DeSilva, Sumter. I just want a clarification. Two is the minimum, but if the campus wanted three, even if the population didn't warrant three, they could have three so they'd have representation on each committee.
Andy?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. So that would change the weight of distribution. I have some sample numbers. If you looked at our student populations as they were computed for this current Senate, if in that situation both of the small campuses took the extra person, then Lancaster, which is currently the largest campus, would go from having 32.1% of the senators to having 30% of the senators. It would redistribute things, but not, it wouldn't be a big deal as far as I see.
And what is the distribution now under the current system?
Currently, Lancaster has 32%, Extended University has 10.7%, Union has 10.7%, Salkehatchee 25%, Sumter 21%.
So whether or not that matter goes to a standing committee, those numbers might be useful, however it's discussed. Maybe we furnish that number so we can actually see the percentage of distribution. Yes, Fidel.
Yeah, from Salkehatchee. I was just wondering if it's possible, say, maybe for us to go back to our various campuses and at the level of the faculty, we can stop with the entire faculty getting feedback and then from here.
Oh, sure. I think what Fidel asked was, can we go back to individual faculties and get some feedback about this? Is that what you said?
Would you like to?
Yeah, various campuses, because I know, like, on my campus, at the level of the faculty meeting, I'm not sure we'll have this discussion.
Okay. Andy?
Maybe the thing to do then is a motion to postpone this vote until, is it January or February that we meet in the spring? So we could move this to we could decide not to vote in November, but instead hold this off till the February.
Well, we could, Andy, but also this is going to be posted until the November meeting, so I don't know if we need to postpone it. Are you making a motion to postpone?
I'm asking if you would like to phrase that as a motion to postpone. We're not voting on it now, no matter what. November is the earliest we could vote it. If that's too soon for us to get to our campuses and get back, we can push it back further. Is November enough time, do you think?
I'm trying to see when we have our next faculty meeting there.
It's November 4th. It's November 4th right now. It should be before.
It's 2 months. I'm assuming every campus will meet.
Carmela, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just, Gottsman, Salvihachi, I just wanted to clarify, I mean, if we do find, I mean, let's, my view would be to plan on discussing this in November, and then if we do find that we need more time,
yeah,
we can always postpone.
That's what I think you should do. Yeah, I think that it should be considered where it's available, and we will post this in the next 10 days, obviously. Talked over, and then if we come back and the majority of us decide, nope, not enough time, we can postpone, we can refer, we can do whatever we need to do. Yeah, I think that's wise. Okay, any other questions?
Go
yes,
to Cajal. Sumter. Can Andy's data be sent to us so we can look at the justification?
You know, it would be good if that can be put into some kind of form for people who are right brain like me. that we put that up with the motion, I think.
Okay.
That would be really good, and that way people can go to one place and see the motion and that data. Thank you, Cajal. That's a good, very good idea. Any other questions about this? I believe that concludes then. I'm on new business. I believe that concludes this item of new business. Now, next item of new business is coming from Wrights. Yes.
So the rights and responsibilities would like to put forth the following motion, tenure and promotion process timeline for mid-year hire. Our rationale is there is currently no formal policy concerning tenure and promotion deadlines for faculty hired mid-year. The motion that we would like to put forward is that the rights and responsibility moves that the Senate adopt the following tenure and promotion process timeline for mid-year hires. And this is our mid-year hire timeline. So I suppose I can take questions as needed.
I mentioned earlier, all the motions coming from Wrights are going to be substantive because they changed the manual. So help me out here, Henny. Do we need to do discussion now, or we'll do discussion now? We'll do discussion now. Okay. So this is the first motion coming from Wrights. Their discussion. So much discussion as difficulty with AV.
Is there a way to split this?
You can reduce it.
Reduce it.
Over there, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, not that one. What's the matter? You guys can't read that?
No.
It's not letting me do it.
There's the
better.
There's
the first page.
Mm-hmm. I'll go try Sumter. Since I'm submitting my promotion file this year, I had a lot of difficulty with the 9-1 due date of notifying the person who writing my teaching summary, because my file due date is November. I have not even prepared that section yet. I've two more months. I think 9 months is too early to submit Section 6.
But that's...
It's in August.
Right.
August hire date?
Yes, you were hired in August, right?
Oh, this is only for the mid-year.
This is for the mid-year. That's right.
Sorry.
It's okay. Other discussion? Okay. So again, this is a substantive motion that will be coming forward under unfinished business next time.
Okay. So the rights and responsibilities committee would like to propose our second motion of the day. Okay. The title: the addition of advising as an example of service. So our rationale is that advising continues to be listed by faculty in yearly reviews as an example of service. Adding language to the PCCFM will formally reflect this practice.
Thank you, Jason. So to clarify, the language that's changing here is it's being offered as an example, not a requirement, correct? Not required service, but an example of service. So it is more of a prompt than anything else. Okay,
right.
Yeah, but it's a good category for you to fit advising into. Okay, so that's the motion that will come under consideration. Is there discussion? Sam.
I wonder what consequences this might have for our students. If it's under teaching, if it's under service, we tend to kind of pick and choose what things we want to serve in. Mm-hmm. Do we want to be telling our students that we get to pick and choose whether we advise them? This is just a question to raise. I mean, if it's under teaching, it seems like it's connected to our teaching responsibilities, and we owe it to our students in some sense. Whether we're living up to that is a different story. If it's under service, I wonder if it's seen more as an optional kind of thing that some people can choose to participate in and some people don't, and we release ourselves from a moral or ethical obligation to our students.
Jason, I'm assuming you have cooked that question over.
Well, we're adding it under service as an option. You know, certainly because it's in service here doesn't mean that you're obligated to include it, right? It's right now the issue is that it's the role of advising seems to be in some senses ambiguous, right? Is advising a role of teaching or is it a role of service? Adding it here just gives just acknowledges formally that advising can be included as service if one chooses to include it that way. If one feels that it best suits their responsibilities of their daily tasks as a service obligation, this just acknowledges that, yeah, if you would like, you can include it as a service commitment. I don't know how that answers your question, but that was our rationale by putting it here.
I think that was different from what you asked. Am I correct, Sam?
I think so.
Okay, I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to go to Steve back here.
Yes. Bishop Sumter, when we were discussing this, Sam, I guess I should address the
question. That's okay. I'll reroute
it. We're talking about the fact that many times there's an effort to put the student with the faculty member most likely to be familiar with the field. And as a result, part of the reasoning was that was going to be a disproportionate allocation of students, so there wouldn't be an even balance among faculty. And that was going to create some problems. And if it were required, then we actually might be doing a disservice because some of the faculty don't know a particular area would be compelled to advise people to know in an entirely different area.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Chris?
Bundrick Lancaster, I think to add to that point, I think this is kind of part of a larger conversation that's happening, I think, across campuses about the role of advising, both in terms of, you know, individual faculty members and in some cases staff members, as well as just kind of this larger ideological question of what advising is. And at least on the Lancaster campus, I think what we're seeing is that there are many, many kinds of advising happening. And with that sort of multiplicity of understandings of advising, I think the sense on Lancaster is that that job just fits better under the heading of service than it would if it were this sort of more straightforward thing with learning objectives and syllabi that we ordinarily put in under teaching.
Thank you, Chris. Sam, everything?
Well, Sarah was actually saying there was a third proposal that removes language from the teaching portion about advising.
Yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah, maybe my comment is better served there. I mean, I don't know if I have any problem with including advising under here, but I just wanted to raise the question about, because we tend to think of service as we get to pick and choose what we want to do for service, and I don't know if academic advising should be that kind of a thing that we pick and choose. I don't know. I mean,
okay. Well, it's a fair philosophical question, I think, and when
we don't want to consider it.
Well, no,
I'm not saying that.
If
nobody else wants to talk about it, that's fine.
I'm not saying that. I am saying that it is something that this committee's cooked over, and that we therefore want to be able to consider it and reply to it. I just want to make sure that your question is understood, and I think so. I think we've got it. Henny?
Yeah, Henny from Bullock and Sumter. I believe that whether it is teaching or service is philosophical, maybe even semantic, I think that the important thing that's important is it needs to be clear in the manual if it is something that we are required or not. Some campuses require it, some campuses do not have that position, so it's unclear at this point in time what the candidates should report. It's not to where so much as to if they have to report it. I think we need to clarify that.
Thank you, Henny. That is, in fact, my understanding of it. What brought this to our attention, or the attention of the committee, was as ever, there's different ways of measuring it across different campuses. And so this is not so much a questioning of the value of advising as literally what does it count under when it comes to the TMP process. That's the way I heard it. Is that correct? Okay. That's the way I'm understanding it. Any other questions about motion two? Okay. Substantive and will be voted on under unfinished business.
And our third motion is to strike advising from teaching responsibilities in the PCCFM. So the rationale is that since each Palmetto College campus understands the value of teaching responsibilities differently, it is best to allow each individual to define the way advising fits into faculty evaluation. Removing language about advising from the list of teaching responsibilities will enable individual candidates for tenure or promotion to address advising duties in ways that best reflect their responsibilities. So our proposed change is to strike the item concerning advising in the teaching responsibilities section of the current manual. As it currently states, instructional staff members who are responsible for academic advising are to be available to students at specified hours during registration and throughout the academic year, and we propose that the item 6, page 48, be removed from the faculty manual.
Any discussion of motion 3 coming from rights and responsibilities? Yes, Susan Cruz.
Susan Cruz Lancaster. I just had two observations, I guess. One was that if you strike this statement from the teaching section, then wouldn't it be important to make sure that it was added to the scholarship section? In other words, shouldn't it be one motion instead of two?
You mean
mean the service.
I'm sorry, the scholarship service section.
Sometimes, I don't know what your rationale was here, but sometimes it gets easier to handle when they come forward as motions. I hear you. We did discuss that very briefly, and of course, that could happen. It could be that it comes off of, I guess it could be that it comes off of teaching responsibilities, but does not get added to advising. So there's different, there's more than one outcome, I think.
I just have one other comment. In the event that it's moved to remove the advising from teaching and add it to the service component, then if someone, for whatever reason, didn't do advising, for whatever reason, then would that be something that would prevent them from obtaining tenure promotion? In other words, would it be like a negative that they would need that in order to obtain tenure?
This was a major question, and I'm going to let Jason answer that one because I know he's cooked that over.
Dana, please speak.
Well, the thing that we discussed in the committee is that, you know, all of the examples of service listed under campus service are not necessarily things that everyone does. So, I can't remember what they are now. So supervising student groups or student organizations, not everybody does that, but you're not penalized for not doing it. Your service falls somewhere in those categories. And everyone on the committee acknowledged that they discuss advising under service in their annual review, and that seems to be a consensus. I haven't heard anyone in our faculty organization argue that it belongs under teaching or that it shows up under teaching anyway. And so the rationale for adding it to the service list was just to sort of acknowledge it as, or formalize it as an option for demonstrating service.
So that it indeed is an option then, not a requirement?
Yes. And the language says that on the advising. So what we're talking about is removing it from one section as a responsibility and moving it to another section as an option. Correct.
And I guess, Sam Down, Southampton, to go back to my point, is that a responsibility we should remove from ourselves? Should we make advising optional?
I would point at the phrasing of this sentence. Staff members who are responsible for advising have to advise. Like, this sentence to me says, if you have to advise, then you have to advise. It seems like this is saying nothing. This is already only talking to people who are required to advise, and if you are, then you are. Apparently some people are not, and you know that's their deal. I see deleting this from the list of teaching stuff is just cutting off a conversation. The fact that it shows up under the list of teaching responsibilities makes it sound like something that should be listed under teaching. I want to cut off anybody's argument that because I put it under service, I'm getting knocked on my file.
I'm not arguing against that. I'm just saying that if it does go under service and it does become optional, we are releasing ourselves of a responsibility to advise. We're saying it is optional that faculty advise.
It is now optional. There are faculty who don't advise.
Okay, fine. Do we want that?
Address the chair, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
Sarah? Actually, Andy just made my point. Not all faculty and not all campuses have their faculty advise. I think Extended University has separate advisors. Am I correct on that? Yeah, so none of their faculty actually advise, and it's not a responsibility for them. So that's why it was moved out of the, or want to move it out of the manual.
Chris?
I would add, too, that in the manual there is a very long list of ways to demonstrate effective teaching. None of those things are any more required than the things listed as ways of demonstrating effective service. So moving it from the teaching section to the service section, I don't believe in any way indicates that it's any less required of us. Certainly there are, you know, there's flexibility in all of those categories.
Right on here.
John, it's the union. I just had a question. I don't know if it's true or not, but is it possible that this statement was put in under teaching to address more so instructors and other instructional faculty that would be a part of the institution that saying they could advise in service, they would, you know, because they don't, but you know, you see what I'm saying? is it more so there for not so much of professors, assistant professors, but for your instructors and maybe even adjuncts if a campus wanted them to advise?
I'm not sure, but I read it as it says, instructional staff members being staff, faculty, anybody that's responsible for advising. Mm-hmm.
It's a T&P question, so I believe. Isn't that correct? We're talking about the language going towards T&P, so you're talking about tenure track. I think that answers your question. There was somebody back here.
Okay. Just wanted to state, Cajal. Roy Sumter, that at Sumter, all faculty are required.
Yes. Yes, we do this differently on different campuses, and this was part of the reasoning. Any other discussion of Motion 3? Andy?
This is following Joe's point, Andy Yanks Lancaster. Is a byproduct of cutting this out that adjuncts and instructors who do not have a service component of their contract can now just walk away from advising?
That's a good question. That might be something worth considering, but I have to get back to three and think about that.
Sure. Okay, so we have here some pretty good discussion on motions 2 and 3. I'm going to just advise, since we do, you never really can tell what the questions are going to be until you put it onto the whole floor. So I'm going to advise that if you have points of discussion or maybe even amendments to the motion, please do consider them over between now and the next session. And that will do. Okay, thank you very much. And we are keeping very good time here, but we do have one motion left to consider from System Affairs. So, Cajal.
The motion from System Affairs states that major area of 27 hours, students select courses chosen from 2 arts and sciences disciplines among the following major areas, so social behavior sciences, arts and humanities, and science and mathematics. The rationale behind it is that the current program of liberal studies requires students to pair 2 disciplines from a select group, and it states that students select only 1 of the following 3 groups. Because this is an interdisciplinary degree program, it will probably benefit from flexibility, and we want to encourage students to feel that they can pair any 2 of the above and provide an opportunity for well-rounded experience. Advisors will still play an important role in guiding and helping students with their decision, but this change will encourage more students to choose a discipline from the science and math area. And Dr. Nesmith informs me that they have very few enrollments in the science and math area, and so this will encourage students in those areas that may feel intimidated in choosing 2 right now. So the students will still continue to choose 12 hours.
Copy. That's what was left off.
12, I'm sorry?
She's a 12-hour copy in addition to those 2
Okay,
hours.
It got cut off. Sorry.
This motion's coming, I guess, initially It's coming from the advisory council, and then has now come from system affairs, coming from committee, needs no second, and going to rule this non-substantive so we can vote on this today. Any discussion? Chris Bunder.
Just a question. I'm a little confused. So the current requirement is the text in orange, and the proposed change is the text in black?
Vice versa.
The current is this one. That's the current.
Changing to?
The change is the orange motion. So we only changing that one word there from
It's a motion to substitute.
Basically. Well, point of clarification, Kajal, it's a little slightly different than what you just said. Rather than students being limited to choosing one of the following three options, choosing two disciplines from one of those options, we do away with those three options and allow them to choose two from any of the disciplines listed in the orange. Does that make sense?
Very good. Thank you, Chris, for that.
Thanks for
clarifying. Other discussion, Sam.
Sam down, Southampton. So how would a cognate work in that sense then?
They would choose the cognate would have to be a different discipline. It could be any.
But just fewer hours.
And one of the things about the cognate, it's a very good question, Sam. They can choose a cognate from one of those areas, but we also allow cognates outside the arts and sciences. We have students who have cognates in education, business, nursing, journalism. Okay, so the major has to be within the arts and sciences. The cognate can be within the arts and sciences or another area. So that's not changing, which is why it's not important.
Thank you, Chris. Other discussion? Okay, hearing none, we'll bring this to the vote. The motion is to change the selection to the language in red or orange. I guess that's orange. Yes?
As a point to make, this is Shelley Jones from Extended University. Women's and gender studies should be added to the list.
There's an omission, inadvertent.
Okay. So
friendly amendment from the floor.
Yes, that's fine. Yes, friendly amendment. Women's and gender studies need to be added to the list. Thank you, Shelley.
In the red part.
In the red part.
Does that just have WGST?
WGST.
Thank you, Shelley. Okay, now we're ready for the question, I do believe. Okay, as amended in a very friendly fashion, can we bring this to the vote? All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Is there any further new business? Okay, hearing none, I know we have one announcement, and that's from Susan Cruz. I'm going to ask Susan to come up.
I'll be fast. I know you guys want to leave. I just wanted to announce that we are doing a study abroad program this summer. It's going to be a Palmetto College course in summer one, so it will be an 8-week program, and we really want it to be inclusive of all of the campuses. We are offering 3 course options. I teach sociology, so students have the option of taking my Sociology of Culture in Western Europe class, and we are still working on it, but students will also have the option of taking a psych class, a 400-level psych class, and a 300-level French class. So we're hoping to be inclusive of students who are in different majors, currently we have 10 students from our Lancaster campus who have committed to coming on our study abroad experience. I've spoken with John Catalano, and he is promoting the study abroad experience at his campus and has also agreed to sponsor three of his students. So I'm hoping to include the other campuses as well. I'm hoping you guys will be open to promoting the study abroad experience at your campus. If students are wanting to sign up for this summer one course, whether it's the sociology course, the French course, or the psychology course, they'll be offered as two-way video options. So basically, we will have 1 week of coursework the first week in summer one. Again, offered two-way video for those that are at other campuses besides Lancaster. And then we will be going on our trip May 17th through the 26th, so just a 10-day trip to London, Paris, and Amsterdam. And then when we come back, we will have 6 weeks, I guess, around there of coursework. So students can earn 3 credit hours for coming, and also they'll get that study abroad experience. We had an information meeting at Lancaster. I had about 40 students who came that were interested, new students. And among them, we just had one student who had had an out-of-country experience. Just about all of them had never even been on an airplane, and they were surprised themselves to discover that. So I think it's something students can definitely benefit from. If you're interested in promoting this at your campus, I think Jean has agreed to email you the brochure that we have. I'm happy to give you more information. I'm really hoping that the deans from the other campuses might be willing to take John as an example and sponsor a student or two or maybe three students from your campuses. Walt has agreed to provide some scholarship money for our students, so we're really looking forward to this being successful and just encouraging our students to have this experience, which I believe, and I think others believe, it can be really life-changing. So if you're interested, Jean has graciously printed some brochures if you want to take one on the way out. And then, of course, we'll have those emailed to you. And you can always email me if you have more questions as well. My email is scruz@mailbox.sc.edu. So thank you.
Okay, quick reminder, if you are in the parking garage, you need one of these green guys to get out. So make sure to pick that up on the way out as you pick up the study abroad brochure. I want to thank everybody for their attendance, participation today. Can I have a motion to adjourn? So moved and seconded. All in favor say aye. All in favor say aye. I'm sure motion is carried. Thank you very much. Drive safely.